This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, your host, and with us is our co-host on the program, as always, Mr. Joe McKenzie. He is the founder of Ripple Connects. Have you heard that before? The founder of Ripple Connects, he turns candidates into contenders. You can find him online at his website, Ripple Connects, that's with an S, RippleConnects.com, and by telephone at 763-438-1621. We do a lot of fine work together, I believe, Joe McKenzie. We talk about career, and the whole idea, I do believe, is to add value to someone's life, and that's what we're talking about this morning. Let's talk about just the whole concept of adding value. What does that really mean when you break it down to add value?
I think, Freddie, that just every opportunity you get to interact with someone, if you can bring some value to that conversation or their life, not only helps them, but helps us. I know that when we talk about who we've worked with and who we've collaborated with, I bet you that we're in some kind of unison, Freddie, that yes, being able to add some value to someone's life is what we do day in and day out. But we can also say that because we do that, we're better for it. We're looking for those new opportunities. We're all in this together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think adding value to someone's life from day to day is the result of us having that mindset that we're all in this together, right?
I would hope so. And I'm wondering, as you say that, Joe McKenzie, is it possible to add value to somebody's life without getting value in yours?
I always think that if you take the steps to add value to someone's life, I think just the positive nature from that brings value back.
Hmm.
It puts you in that right mindset, that of collaboration and growth and forward thinking. So it may be the case, but I know for me to add value to somebody else's life or career, I always get something from it, even if it's just a positive feelings that I knew that I put my best foot forward.
All right, Joe McKenzie with us talking about adding value this weekend. What about adding value, introducing one of your connections to another? Is that a value add or is that something else?
No, that's a value add. I have benefited greatly from people that I've met many years ago that they connected me to other like-minded people or people that we could collaborate with. That when I think fondly of some of my early mentors and how they acted as a connector,
mm-hmm,
to other people, the level of value that added to my life is off the charts, Freddie. In fact, think about how we got a chance to meet and that person that connected us together. Without that person bringing me and you together, we wouldn't be speaking here today. And think about how that ripples out each week on New Beginnings about the careers. Without that person that connected us 7 years ago, how would we even be collaborating today to even be talking about this subject? So yes, being a connector can add a great, great amount of value to someone's life.
Wow. You know, being a connector is really, I think people underplay that, but there are some people who they call themselves the king or the queen maker. Is that the same thing?
I think a connector is just a very natural way of sharing someone that you think may be a benefit or somewhere they can work together. I see it more as a natural progression of the people that I know that I think I can connect them to somebody. So yes, Freddie, I see that as a natural connection for two people that may be able to collaborate. They have something in common or they can bring value to each of their lives. So that's really how I have viewed it. And that's how I've benefited. Many of the people that were introduced to me through some of my early mentors, the whole reason behind it was because those people, my mentors, thought that there would be an opportunity for me to work with them, collaborate with them, bring some value to each of our lives. And so That's personally, that's how I view a connector, that they're willing to share the people they know with people that they see a lot of. There's a lot of sense in bringing them together, I should say.
Talking to Joe McKenzie this weekend about adding value. That's our topic this weekend. Adding is certainly an action word, but I'm wondering if listening to someone is a way to add value or not.
Well, I believe so. I think we live in such a fast-paced world that many people are wanting to be heard. And when you feel that you've been heard, doesn't that bring a sense of the value to that conversation, that outlook?
It certainly lifts my self-esteem when I know that I have been heard or someone is listening at the very least.
Yeah, it's often overlooked because we live in such a crazy, fast-paced world. Like I said, the ability to just slow down and have a conversation with someone and lead that conversation, Freddie, with being heard or feel that you're being heard is of great value to people's lives. And so when we talk about the bigger topic of adding value to someone's life, it may not that we have to go to all ends to make this happen or spend a lot of time or energy or money. It can just be answering the phone and listening to someone. That can be how you add value to that person's life that day.
There are so many people who are not heard. And in listening to someone, it just seems to dovetail simply into giving of yourself. And that's the gift of time.
Yes. Freddie, I've, you know, the ability to collaborate with you this last 7 years, your time is invaluable to me because I learned from it. I know that I'm in a position where we can collaborate and I may be able to help you. So your time, that you're a very busy person as am I, but that time together, that is truly a gift as I see it. And because there's so much value that is taken away from that. Just giving someone the gift of time over a cup of coffee or just a virtual call or a phone call can be a way you can add value to someone's life. Just that simple gift of time can be invaluable.
So incredible. Everyone, this weekend we're talking about adding value, steps that we can take to add value to someone else's career or even to their lives and why, and also how it can add to yours. We talked about maybe helping someone to being a connector for someone to connect them with other folks in your circle. We just talked about listening to someone. Sometimes all it is someone just wants to be heard. We talked about the gift of time. What about just adding, how do you add the gift of your experience, Joe McKenzie?
Well, I've often thought that people have, and this is the case with me, that I've learned more from people's career experiences, sometimes not positive experiences, maybe some mistakes. So many people that I've learned from many people about their mistakes, and they were willing to share that with me. And so therefore, sometimes I will share some of my mistakes, some of my career experiences with others. And I do think that adds value to their careers because maybe they will watch for it or pick up on that. And so even just sharing your career experience can be helpful to somebody. Do you agree with that statement, Freddie?
I do, especially in the area of a conflict or an issue or even an opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. That, drill it down to that, conflict, opportunity. Freddie, what would you do in this situation? And your response to me could be the best piece of information I could ever have gotten. And therefore, the result is that opportunity is fulfilled or that conflict is resolved. What a great way to help someone in their everyday life by just adding your value of your own career experience.
And it's so funny that sometimes we don't realize how valuable our own experience is with regard to our careers until we start mm-hmm. talking to someone else about our
That's
careers
correct.
And imparting that information.
That often happens. We don't think it's valuable to somebody until they see it, some similarities, what they're dealing with and how we handled it. And so, yeah, I think that happens quite a bit where we don't value our own experience until we are sharing it.
So, Joe, we're just about out of time, but what would be one thought that you'd like to leave with our audience this weekend in terms of an action item?
adding value to someone's life does not take a lot of time, effort, or resources. It can just be simple steps that we can add value to someone's life each day. But also the positive is that we get value back because we're taking those steps in our own lives and career.
That's Joe McKenzie, co-host on New Beginnings. And Joe, you do some fine work at Ripple Connects.
Yes, we do. We turn candidates into contenders.
And our program continues right now.
If you are ready to reinvent, recalibrate, or retool your career, Ripple Connects can help. That's RippleConnects.com. We work one-on-one with our clients in a safe, collaborative fashion designed to significantly improve the likelihood of landing the ideal engagement. Take control of your job search and create your ideal future. Engage with Ripple Connects, where we turn candidates into contenders. For more information, RippleConnects.com.
This is the Real Possibilities Update, your guide to all the exciting things that are happening with AARP in the Twin Cities. Because if you don't think Real Possibilities in the Twin Cities when you think AARP, well, then you don't know ARP. You see, AARP is hosting free Movies for Grown-Ups screenings at theaters across the metro. They're helping protect families from identity theft and scams with the AARP Fraud Watch Network. And AARP volunteers are helping people in need complete their tax returns free of charge. So whether you're a caregiver, someone who's trying to save for retirement, or if you just want to save money and connect with friends and neighbors for fun at local events, then AARP has resources for you. Get to know AARP and see all the real possibilities right here in the Twin Cities at aarp.org/Twin Cities.
Do you ever wish that you could right a wrong or correct a mistake by having the chance to do something over? That gives you a fresh start. That's our point of focus.
I have a great time with my life, and I want to share it.
Nowadays, a lot of people think of positivity and optimism as something unrealistic, something almost delusional.
It teaches the cultivation of peace of mind as a power center out of which comes driving energy.
This is life and enterprise management.
I love living. I think that's infectious. It's something that you can't fake.
The truth is that every day can be a new beginning or a fresh start. Every day you have a new opportunity to mold into something fulfilling. You have the time, a fresh 24 hours, and the capability to do all there is needed to be done. Every relationship is renewed as you contribute more understanding and more gentleness to the situation. Even routine responsibilities begin to hold your interest as you acknowledge that whatever you do your very best. Make a fresh start emotionally, physically, and spiritually, and declare and follow through on that truth that every day is a new beginning or a fresh start. That's our point of focus. If you'd like to learn more, all you have to do is visit me at www.freddybell.com or call 888-639-9738. Or you can reach me by email. It's freddy@freddybell.com. freddy@freddybell.com. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment. Every day is a chance for a fresh start.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Thanks so much for being with us on New Beginnings this weekend. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention influenza experts are concerned that the United States could be at risk for a severe flu season this year. May now have reduced immunity against influenza after seasonal flu cases reached an all-time low last year when parts of the nation were shut down. Last year, there were very few flu cases, largely because of masking and physical distancing and other prevention measures put in place by the COVID-19 pandemic. Former FDA Chief Scott Gottlieb says this flu season could be a whopper.
Well, look, I think we're transitioning from the pandemic phase of this virus to a more endemic phase, meaning that this is going to become a persistent risk, a persistent virus that circulates every year, much like influenza. And there's not a clean line demarcating those two sort of states of fitness. It's going to be messy, and it's going to be unclear when we're kind of out of the pandemic and this is more of an endemic virus. It's something we're going to know when we look back a couple of years from now. On the back end of this, we are going to be entering a more endemic phase of this virus. I do believe this is the last major surge of infection. Even if you see new variants, they're likely to emerge within the Delta lineage, and hopefully we'll be able to vaccinate against them in the future. And so that question becomes, how do businesses deal with the fact that COVID is going to circulate like the flu? I think it's going to be a risk at least on par with the flu, and we already have a flu season. And so if you sort of layer on top of our ordinary flu season, now a COVID season, and it causes a similar amount of death and disease, I think the total hit on public health and also productivity is going to be too great for us to sustain and just be business as usual. I mean, the productivity impact of the flu season every year is in the tens of billions of dollars, both direct and indirect costs, and this on top of it is just going to be too much to bear, in my view. We haven't seen a flu season last year. We're in for a whopper. Because we haven't put immunity into the population in at least one and maybe now 2 years, when the flu does come back, and it will come back, it's going to come back very aggressively, because you're just going to have a population that hasn't had much flu immunity in a number of years. And so we need to be mindful of that. We could see a situation either this year or next year where you have a really bad flu season. And if there's a mismatch between the flu vaccine and the circulating strain, it could be very bad. And then you're going to have COVID on top of that. So businesses are going to have to do things differently. And I think they ought to start thinking about that now, how they create a work environment that's safer for people to work in with respect to respiratory pathogens. So it's things like trying to de-densify offices, especially in the peak sort of COVID flu seasons, maybe allowing people a more flexible schedule of telework, allowing people to, you know, zoom into meetings even within the office. You're not crowding people into conference rooms, putting in place better air filtration and handling so that the air quality is better in offices. You know, you have hospital grade air filtration, trying to find alternative transportation so everyone isn't crowding on public transportation, maybe coming to work on off hours so you're not going on public transportation during peak hours. There's things that businesses can do, at least over the period of time when this virus is going to be circulating. It's sort of peak COVID season, to try to reduce risk and try to improve respiratory health. And I think we need to think about what that construct looks like.
Has industry adapted to the extent that it needs to, or is there more work to be done?
I don't think that businesses really have undergone a very comprehensive approach to how they improve the work environment, workflow, because people aren't back in the office yet, and most businesses aren't contemplating bringing everyone back into the office. And so they haven't had to contemplate what happens when we go back to work inside an office building full time. How do we improve the flow of people so that we reduce the risk that you're going to have the kind of crowding that creates these sort of, you know, conditions for super spreading, if you will? That's going to probably be more likely a 2022 event. My guess is that, you know, business isn't going to bring people back in full this year. Most businesses have put off their restart dates. And then once we get into the sort of density of the winter, I think there's going to be enough persistent risk from COVID and influenza, for that matter, that they're probably going to take a cautious approach. But we need to start thinking about this, because it's not just improving the air handling system. That's a key part of it, but it's changing the workday. The idea that you're going to have meetings in the office, people are going to be physically in their office, but they're going to be taking the meetings from their desks. You're actually using technology to facilitate interactions within the office. Those are the kinds of things we need to think about doing if we're serious about trying to avoid unnecessary interactions that could be conducive to spread. You're seeing a lot of the vaccine mandates in businesses be applied to work circumstances where it's harder to social distance and harder to change how people flow in a work environment in order to reduce risk. So, you know, the most obvious was the meatpacking plants. They ended up being very conducive to spread. You had people working very closely together in a cold environment that was probably more conducive to the spread of aerosols. And we saw some pretty significant outbreaks and unfortunate outcomes among people who worked in that industry. And so now you're seeing vaccine mandates be put in place in those places of employment. You're seeing masks being used aggressively on the job, high quality masks. And I think that that's really going to be how we approach this. You're going to see more mask use in some of these occupations, particularly people who are in contact with a lot of people over the course of the day, like a grocery store worker who, you know, works on a checkout line, is in contact with a lot of people. And I think you're going to see more of an imperative to make sure people are vaccinated in those environments. from a clinical standpoint, I think it's important for kids to get vaccinated, even though the outcomes aren't nearly as severe in kids as they are in older individuals. This isn't a benign illness in children. You're still seeing bad outcomes in kids, and we don't understand the long-term sequelae of this infection. There's going to be some long-term consequences of mass infecting a significant portion of the population with COVID. This is a virus that does seem to have some lingering effects in a portion of the population. The UK had a study showing 1.8% of kids had persistent symptoms, neurological symptoms, at 2 months out from their infection. It doesn't sound like a lot, but if you're infecting tens of millions of children, that's a lot of kids on an absolute basis that are going to have some lingering effects of a virus that was otherwise probably avoidable. So I think it's important that we vaccinate the children from just a purely public health position. I think it's also important because parents still feel apprehensive about going into a work environment because they're worried about bringing the infection back into their homes. I know a lot of people, and I think it's more than anecdotal, who feel reasonably confident that they're not going to suffer a bad COVID outcome because they're vaccinated, they're otherwise healthy, they might be younger. But their concern is that they'll go into an office environment, get an asymptomatic infection or mild infection, not recognize it, and then bring the infection back into the home where they have unvaccinated kids. So I think if we want to really instill confidence in people to go back to work in a more robust fashion, we have to find a way to allow adults to be able to protect their children if they want to, and that's going to be through vaccination. The bigger debate is your decision to get vaccinated an individual choice, or is it a collective choice? Does it impact the community? I think very clearly it impacts the community. These aren't just decisions that people are making individually. Everything's an individual choice, but it's also a collective choice. And I think that that's a hard concept because most people think of healthcare decisions as, you know, my body, my decision. But there's issues beyond that when you're, you know, risking bringing in an infectious disease into an environment where other people are vulnerable. But I think to the extent that it is a collective choice and it does impact the community, if there are going to be requirements imposed on individuals about vaccination, it should be done at the level of the community, the environment that's being impacted. So a school board voting to mandate vaccines for a school district or a business deciding to implement a mandate on its own. I think to the extent that we pull these decisions away from local decision making, it starts to have a political veneer and people start to harden their positions. And so I don't think governors should be telling businesses they can't mandate vaccination, quite certainly. And I don't think the federal government should be telling them they have to, because I think when you do that, you take something that's sort of furtively political and make it objectively political, and you're just going to harden the positions. The way to accomplish a high rate of vaccination was, I think, continue on the course that we were on. I think the administration was doing a good job rolling out the vaccine. The mandates on the federal workforce certainly is within the federal government's purview to do, and I think that provides a lot of cover to private businesses who want to impose their own mandates. And so it's just a question of, is the gain that you've achieved worth what you've done from the standpoint of creating a greater political debate around vaccination? And I don't know that the answer is yes. I don't know that the benefit in terms of pickup of additional couple of percentage points of people vaccinated is worth the impact that we're going to have right now, where this is going to now become a political issue. It's going to be a legal issue that gets litigated. A lot of businesses that might have moved forward with mandates on their own are now going to wait and see what happens. They're going to wait for the federal government to tell them to do it because they know that that may be coming. It's going to take the federal government months to implement this, even if they're not challenged in court. OSHA, the component of the Labor Department, needs to issue regulations. Then they need to issue guidance to businesses on how to implement those regulations. Then they need to give a grace period to businesses to actually implement the mandate. Then they need to figure out how they're going to ensure compliance. And so this isn't going to be something that happens quickly. And I think it may freeze the marketplace and have the unintended consequence of actually forestalling mandates that businesses otherwise would have imposed on their own. We need to build better capacities for actually being able to scale up a response, develop the antibody drugs and be able to scale their mass production, be able to quickly develop a diagnostic test and deploy it very widely. We need better systems for gathering information and doing analysis that can inform real-time decision-making. This is what CDC was supposed to do, but they were late. They didn't gather good information. They didn't put out good guidance. It wasn't put out in a way that it was interpretable to people. It seemed confusing. It seemed conflicting. And then we need to be able to spot these outbreaks when they emerge in foreign countries. And that's where the foreign intelligence services come in. We can't rely on the good graces of foreign countries to just inform us when they have an outbreak of a dangerous pathogen. We know countries haven't been forthcoming, even friendly countries haven't been forthcoming with this information in the past. And certainly China wasn't forthcoming in this instance. They had information that was available much earlier that wasn't shared with the public, including they never shared the source strains, which would have helped us develop diagnostics and vaccines much earlier. So we need to have the capacity overseas to actually gather this information. That's going to mean a much greater role for our intelligence agencies in the public, in the global public health mission, where historically they haven't really had a role.
And you're listening to New Beginnings. If you'd like more information, Freddie at FreddieBell.com. And our weekend program continues right now.
You would do anything to protect the ones you love. Help make sure your child is protected from dangerous diseases by getting them vaccinated. Talk to your child's doctor about staying on track with recommended vaccines during this COVID-19 pandemic.
This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
And now, our supporting partner, AARP in the Twin Cities.
Hello again, everyone, and it's our pleasure now to turn our attention to the AARP Minnesota. Joining us right now from the Mayo Clinic is an associate with neurology. Her name is Angela Lundy from the Mayo Clinic. She's an associate in neurology, and she's here to talk about a huge event happening on October 29th for the Mayo Clinic Conference on Brain Health and Dementia. Who better than you to talk about that? What will the attendees be witnessing as this conference unfolds?
Good question. Thanks, Freddie. Thanks for this opportunity to talk about the Mayo Clinic Conference on Brain Health and Dementia. And as you sort of alluded to, it is supported by three real trusted organizations, I hope, not only the Mayo Clinic, but also the Alzheimer's Association, as well as AARP. And this virtual event, which is free, happening on October 29th, will take place from about 9 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon. Then there'll be a little bit of a break, and from 2:30 to 4, there's an opportunity for an optional workshop. And Freddie, what I really hope that people glean from this day is, number one, just an opportunity to come together and to recognize that dementia affects so many people, not only across the country, but here in our states and in our community. So we really want this conference to, in a way, be a way for people to have a sense of hope. So I would say that this conference is really going to be heavy on the hope side. And, you know, it's not helpful to sugarcoat dementia. Families tell us that they want and want to understand and need to know what they are facing. And this understanding about dementia and the implications of dementia, the warning signs of dementia, so they can seek a diagnosis, are actually part of the hope message. Also, when I speak about hope, I'm not just talking about hope for a cure. I really want people who come to this conference to make sure they realize that if you're impacted by dementia, you're caring for a family member or relative with dementia, it's important to know that there are ways to improve the day-to-day quality of their life. So we are going to be talking about research. We are going to be talking about potential treatments and therapies, but we're also going to be spending a lot of time showcasing things people can do today to really improve their lives if they are impacted by Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia.
We're talking with Angela Lundy from the Mayo Clinic about a huge conference coming up October 29th, the Mayo Clinic Conference on Brain Health and Dementia. And there's dementia has been in the news here recently about some breakthroughs and some discoveries. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Sure. You know, and that's definitely going to be one of the conversations that we have at the conference. Maybe one of the things that you're alluding to is something that happened this summer, and that is that the Food and Drug Administration approved a new medication, aducanumab, that may play a role in slowing the progression of early stage Alzheimer's disease. So I'm guessing that many people have heard about this, and there are many questions that surround it. So we really hope that this conference will provide an opportunity for experts to really weigh in and make sure that families have the kind of information they need to understand this therapy and any other therapies that may be down the pike, so that they can be making informed decisions. So we really are intending to help sort that out for folks.
In addition to the many experts from the Mayo Clinic and also from the Alzheimer's Association, you've got a noted author will be joining you as well, and he'll be talking about a newly released book.
Yeah, so we have a gentleman from the University of Pennsylvania, and his name is Dr. Jason Karlowicz, and his new book is called The Problem of Alzheimer's Disease, How Science, Culture, and Politics Turned a Rare Disease into a Crisis and What We Can Do About It. And his book really, I think, underscores again the theme of our conference, and that is that there are ways to preserve personhood and identity and to continue to give those impacted by dementia a real sense of purpose and a message that even if you're affected by dementia, you can still continue to contribute to your life and to the lives of others in many ways. So he's just a really inspirational, but also I would say really practical speaker and author. And I think those who listen into his session are really going to leave with an important message.
What a wonderful name for the conference, A Brighter Path Forward. Do you have a final thought for our listeners this morning about the big conference coming up on October 29th?
I think my final thought would just be this message of hope. You know, I think we've all, you know, been impacted by messages in the past year that don't necessarily lead us down a path of hope. And those impacted by dementia, I think, over the past year and a half have been further impacted by the isolation, social isolation that has surrounded us. And I think one thing we've all now experienced is what it must or what it could feel like to live with Alzheimer's disease or related dementia and how much social isolation really impacts us all. So I think one thing that will happen in this conference is we'll all come together, celebrate to some degree the hope that there is a brighter path forward and do so with a greater energy and empathy.
How can our listeners attend, or is it open to the public?
It is absolutely open to the public. There's no cost to attend. We do ask that you register in advance, and the easiest thing to do is just to go to your computer and to search Mayo Clinic Conference on Brain Health, and you should easily find information about the conference and can register there.
Angela Lundy from the Mayo Clinic, thanks for giving us a ray of hope this morning on New Beginnings.
Thank you, Freddie.
Hi again, everyone, and joining us right now, I'm so excited because it's the new State Director for AARP Minnesota, no stranger to the area. Say hello to Kathy McClear. Good morning and welcome. Congratulations.
Good morning and thank you. I'm so, so grateful for the opportunity to be joining AARP Minnesota and working on behalf of the 50-plus in Minnesota.
Did it take a lot of arm twisting, Kathy McClear, to say yes to this running this wonderful organization in the state of Minnesota?
No, I did not have to think twice about this opportunity. I am no stranger to the area. I was born and raised in South Dakota, so I'm just across the border. But I'm a graduate of the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I worked at WCCO-TV for a number of years. And then in my 16 years with AARP, I've had lots of opportunities to work with the AARP Minnesota staff and volunteers. And it's a fantastic team that's really doing fantastic work on behalf of those 50 and older in the state. So I'm really thrilled to be, I kind of call it coming home to some degree, because I've spent a lot of time in the area and I'm just thrilled to be coming back in this capacity.
Why does AARP hold such a special place for you?
You know, because of the work that they do, we are all about empowering people to live how they want as they age and make sure that they have ample opportunities to have access to good health care, to have financial security as they age, and ample opportunities to give back. And I think one of those really fantastic programs that AARP Minnesota does in conjunction with Pollen Minnesota is the 50 Over 50 program, which honors individuals who have made significant differences in their communities, you know, whether it's business, in the nonprofit sector, disruption, just shaking things up and making a difference, and with the arts. And we've been doing this 50 Over 50 program for about, since 2016, And we've honored more than 250 individuals over the course of that time. And it's just been so impressive to see the breadth and the depth of the work that all of these fantastic honorees have done to improve the lives of their neighbors in Minnesota.
Everyone, we're talking with the new state director for AARP Minnesota, Kathy McLear. And you mentioned Pollen and AARP Minnesota on October 19th and the 50 over 50. So individuals get a chance to hear great stories on October 19th. Is that right?
Absolutely. Typically, this effort has been in person, and we have a great program that we put on and invite people to come join us. And, you know, certainly with the pandemic, things are just a little bit different and need to be for everyone's safety and well-being. So this year, we're having a virtual opportunity and really inviting anyone to join us on the 19th at 11:30 a.m. And what folks will find when they join us is they will have an opportunity to hear some of those inspiring stories from our 50 over 50 honorees who have really mastered that art of aging well throughout their volunteer efforts. Folks who join will be able to connect with people across the state who share that same passion for community. And I know for sure, having spent time in Minnesota, that Minnesota nice isn't just a saying. It really is a way of life, because about 41% of us have volunteered in Minnesota at some point in time and over the last few years. And it makes us feel good. It benefits our communities. And this 50 over 50 program on the 19th of October is really a way to just highlight that good work of those 50 and older volunteers that we have all around us, making a huge difference.
What can you say to people who are considering volunteering, but they've never done it, or maybe just a handful of times? What's the benefit of volunteering, not only for the organization, but for the individual?
Yeah, I mean, volunteering just does so much for us. It keeps us connected with our communities. It gives us a sense of well-being. It lifts our spirits. It makes us feel part of the community. And it impacts people on both sides. And I think even during these really challenging times when people have, maybe been stuck at home a little bit, AARP has done a really nice job of finding ways to give back and to contribute to our communities, even in small ways that doesn't necessarily mean having to go out and show up at some place in person. Maybe you're making sandwiches that you can, have someone else deliver on your behalf to some folks who are in need, or, making cards for veterans, or, making pet toys. I know we've had a couple of virtual programs on making pet toys to donate to local shelters. It just gives us such a feeling of well-being, and it just makes you feel good to know that you're giving back and making a difference in someone else's life.
Do you have a final thought for our Twin Cities audience on the 50 over 50 program and what Minnesotans can expect from your leadership over the next several decades, I hope?
Well, sure. I do hope to be there for a very long time. And I really look forward to leading this team who does such fantastic work around advocacy for those 50 and older. We do a lot with fighting fraud and helping protect consumers. We work on healthcare issues. We work on, education issues, helping people prepare for retirement and whatever their what's next is. If they choose to do something else aside from their first career. And I'm really looking forward to working with this team as we find those opportunities to make life better, and around livable communities as well, making sure that the communities that we all live in are safe places to live and enjoy the time, in our golden years. And as far as the 50 over 50 program, we are just, people 50 and older are making such a huge difference, from Neighborhood Crime Stoppers. We have spiritual leaders. We have a Native healer who's been honored and recognized. We know that, the last couple of years have been tough for everyone. And this is just such a positive way to kind of get back into the swing of things and feel good about what our neighbors have been doing.
Well, I won't say welcome to Minnesota, but welcome back, Kathy McLear, the new state director for AARP Minnesota. Thank you so much for being with us, and we just really enjoy your enthusiasm and your love for the state and for the organization.
Well, thank you so much, Freddie. It's really a pleasure to be back and really a pleasure to be talking with you.
And New Beginnings continues right now.
This is the Real Possibilities Update, your guide to all the exciting things that are happening with AARP in the Twin Cities. Because if you don't think real possibilities in the Twin Cities when you think AARP, well, then you don't know ARP. Get to know AARP and see all the real possibilities right here in the Twin Cities at aarp.org/Twin Cities. Introducing the New Beginnings podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. Check out the New Beginnings podcast today.
As New Beginnings continues, we now take you to the spirituality portion of our program, where we introduce the senior minister of Unity South Twin Cities, the Reverend James Stacy. We now join Reverend Stacy with a program already in progress.
Education alone will not do it. Sandra said she remembered an old expression that sort of speaks to this. A person convinced against their will is of the same opinion still. People cannot be forced to change through a group discussion, through teamwork. They have to be willing to let go the distinctions that they've applied. Well, I learned from another case. This happened around the time of the events in Charlottesville. And I heard this individual lecture 2 years ago at the Chautauqua Institution in New York State. Risa Golubov is the first woman ever to be dean of the great school of law at the University of Virginia, Charlottesville. And she said she learned something. Very often these days we hear, well, let's all sit down at the table and have a conversation. Let's learn about one another. Open our understanding. Open our hearts. And she said, dear friend, I had a realization after the events in Charlottesville. She said, I was in such a community discussion, and people challenged and said, excuse me, you are a Jew. I do not want you here. Get out. But she said it was a lesson for her because she realized how important is that first step of willingness. Willingness to see things differently, to feel things differently. A willingness to step out of our self-conceived barriers of who we are, and perhaps more importantly, who others are. And she said it's hard to have this mind-opening conversation with others when people don't want to talk to you, don't think you have a right to be at the table. And of course, her experience was as a Jewish woman, but it's not limited to that. There are many ways that people do not feel welcome at a community table. So this willingness is a critical point. And in my opinion, willingness is what we learn in our spiritual practice. It's what I hope Unity teaches in its own way, in its own tradition, but it's that willingness step that comes before anything can be accomplished at the level of education or learning about others, learning about distinctions. First, we have to be willing to be present to others, willing to welcome others into our presence, willing to work with others. So the four steps that I'd like to center this lesson around are, one, that willingness component. Two, to recognize the power of group experience. Like when we come together in our times of prayer, when we work with silent unity, our spiritual practice that recognizes we are greater together than we are in isolation, that we never walk alone, that we can discover a unity, a spiritual reality that is within our entire group. Third point, that from that group experience, we can return to our individual daily practice and say, as we often do, what is mine to do? What step can I take to further this intention or vision that I've realized in the willing group experience? And then, fourth step, then we are ready for teamwork, group intention, social action, work for the good of our common welfare. But there was a lot of preparatory work before we get to that social action. I want to close with the beautiful poetic form that Rumi gives to this idea of going beyond boundaries. Hear these words. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. That famous quotation goes further. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. Do you hear that idea of unity, of becoming one? Let's hear it again. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full, too unlimited to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. So let's take a journey in a time of prayer. If we allow ourselves in prayer to shift our attention, our journey might only take a minute. It doesn't have to be lengthy to be powerful. So I invite you to join me in a unity in the silence of prayer, if you are willing. Gently close your eyes to turn your attention not within yourself in isolation, but to turn your attention into the spiritual reality behind all things, yourself, others, all creation. I invite you to hold this first step if you are willing. If you are not, then simply take this time to daydream or hold whatever thoughts you choose. But if you are willing, hold this thought with me. I am willing to go beyond my ego self. I am willing.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org.
Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com.
If you're ready to reinvent, recalibrate, or retool your career, Ripple Connects can help. Visit RippleConnects.com. We work one-on-one with our clients in a safe, collaborative fashion designed to significantly improve the likelihood of landing the ideal engagement. Take control of your job search and create your ideal future. Engage with Ripple Connects, where we turn candidates into contenders. Go to RippleConnects.com.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for making us a part of your weekend on New Beginnings. This is Freddie Bell reminding you that every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.